Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Well, Iowa lost 31-0 at Penn State. We got a lot to break down. As you can see, I don't have Sean Bock here, but I do have former Iowa beat writer for the Des Moines Register and my good friend, Kankton Lloyd Smith, who now covers Alabama for The Athletic. Kenny, you and I have talked about doing a podcast together for I don't know how long.
Yeah, basically.
So I'm happy we actually made it work. And what better way to make it work than after the thrilling game against Penn State, Iowa going up there to the whiteout. But I know you've kept up with Iowa. I've been impressed that you have, especially since, you know, I don't know how many casual people right now want to watch Iowa football, given kind of where it's at right now. But before we dive into that, how's the transition been to Alabama? I know you've been crushing it on the beat, trying to get your reputation there and continue to spread your good work. But dude, let's talk a little bit of Alabama real quick. How are things going?
Yeah, everything is cool here. It was definitely a crazy transition, and really only a few people know how much I was going through at that moment when I was still in Iowa at the Register, and then The Athletic came along and I was entertaining. There was, you know, other offers on the table as well to leave. So it was a lot, but Alabama's been cool. It's a lot different, obviously, than Iowa. Like, first of all, you know, for people who don't understand or aren't as privy to what it's like for media to get access to players and coaches, Iowa media is unbelievable in terms of the amount of access that the media gets to the players. Like, the fact that in Iowa we can request players for availabilities, we can request true freshmen. Iowa usually accommodates our request. That we get Kirk for about 30 minutes.
Yeah, about 30, I'd say.
Assistant coaches on Wednesday via Zoom. It's just unbelievable. Alabama's like the complete opposite of that. We get Saban twice a week for, you know, about 10-ish minutes. We get 5 players across 2 days, and they're only up there for like 10 minutes at a time. It's at a podium, so there's no scrum. So, you know, as you see with Iowa, you know, you have Xavier Wampo over here, might be 3 people. And then Cooper is over here. He might have 4 people. And Mason Richmond might have 5 people. But Alabama is, you know, a player at the podium. Everybody's sitting down. It's like very formal. So it's different, but it's been cool here. The fan base obviously is rabid. Being back south, close to home, understatement, right? Being back south close to home has been cool as well. So been able to see my family a lot, been able to see my friends a lot down here, which has been nice. And, you know, it's kind of ironic that the running joke when I left for Bama was, oh, you're about to see explosive offense. You're about to see a whole lot of points and a whole lot of touchdowns. And, you know, through 4 weeks, Alabama's kind of gone through their own offensive controversy with, you know, the quarterback situation, and the offensive line hasn't played up to par either. So Alabama's still trying to find their identity as well. So I guess it was a good time to jump on the beat just because Alabama's not the – road, you know, they're not the dominant road grading 12-0. We can just pencil them into the national championship that we've been used to seeing from that program for a long time. There's a little bit more, I guess, like angst, controversy, whatever you want to call it. Definitely a lot more intrigue. I think after a while, even if you're a fan of a team, you kind of get tired of reading about a 12-0 team for 15 years, for 10 years. Sometimes, you know, things happen. You know, Alabama's not as dominant as they was, and that opens up opportunities to talk about different things and for new storylines to emerge. So it's been cool so far. Trying to get on and stay, trying to get on and stay on Saban's good side. So that's a, you know, that's an everyday, every week challenge. But it's been cool. Obviously, my former coworker and your, I guess, coworker in a way, Cody Goodwin, is down here covering Bama for Bama 247. So shout out to Cody. I see him all the time. And
good dude. Deserved the opportunity for sure.
100%. So I'm glad that he's down here. And it's funny that you mentioned me watching Iowa in a casual way, because Cody's like not really watching Iowa at all. And he's just like, when I, after the Ole Miss game last Saturday, I'm leaving the press room. I'm like, I'm talking to Cody. I'm like, yeah, I'm about to go watch Iowa play Penn State. He's like, why would you do that to yourself? It's like, I don't, I guess.
Cody's been texting me on the side about Iowa. Yeah. And he goes, what are you going to write about? Like, he's trying to give me different angles and stats and stuff. And it's so funny to me.
Yeah. So, you know, Cody is not a, you know, he's obviously not an Iowa hater. And he, you know, we talk about Iowa and all that stuff. So he's keeping up with it, but he's just not like devoting himself to watching the games like I have. I think I've watched every single game this year. So whether I'm a, you know, good person or a good fan, or if I'm crazy, I've been watching. So, you know, it's dope to be here and to be able to just kind of like take a break from Bama and talk about Iowa this season.
Well, it's nice for you to be out of the scope of things, but still in tune enough. So you have the perspective of covering the beat and being on the beat, but now you're just watching as a, what, football fan, we'll call it.
I'm an Iowa fan. I think you can.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good way to put it. I'm a fan. And then just on another note, you know, for I think your 24/7 subscribers know, but I am a part of the Hawkeye Insider message board. I haven't been really active on the board recently just because like my job has me bogged down, but I keep up with you and Sean's work. I read the board. I talk to Chad multiple times a week, so I'm still constant communication with Chad. I subscribe to the Register. I'm a part of his tech group. Obviously, Scott Docterman, we're coworkers now. So, you know, so Scott keeping up with him, you know, John Steppy, the Gazette, me and him have exchanged a few messages since I've been gone too. So still very much tapped into to the beat and watching what's going on. And before we get into anything else, want to give a shout out to my replacement, Tyler Tashman. He's been writing some really good features. I've been enjoying what he's doing as well, and enjoying the team that him and Chad have formed. So, you know, shout out to Iowa Media, made some good friends out there, and obviously a lot of good, you know, reporters out there. So staying tapped in as much as I can.
You know, I think another thing too, really quick. One, since you only get Saban for like 10 minutes, that wouldn't even cover half of – that's like Kirk's opening statement sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't imagine only having Kirk for 10 minutes because he'd be, you know, his opening statement for 5 or 6, and then you get – what, 3 questions in maybe at most.
Yeah.
And the other part too, and I don't know if you've mentioned this, like you were not looking to leave Iowa. Like these were opportunities that just presented themselves to you. So like for, and again, I don't think people thought that you were looking to leave or actively seeking a way out, but I thought just from me being, you and I being as close as we are, I thought I would at least put that on the record. Like you were never looking to leave Iowa.
Yeah.
It was just something that ended up happening.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, for as much as I talked about the weather and, you know, how culture
driving.
Just driving, how different it is you know, where I'm from to where I was living. I love my time out there. And I hoped that, you know, the Iowa fans and the people there felt like I embraced living out there and I enjoyed being out there and I enjoyed what I did. I truly did. And like you said, I wasn't looking to leave, but you know, when you have an opportunity to cover the premier program in the sport and to do it, you know, for a publication like The Athletic and to be close to home, it was kind of a no-brainer. But it was hard to leave, obviously. Thank you for throwing that out there, that I wasn't exactly just like looking for, you know, any opportunity.
It's not the meme of just the piece and just disappear like fame.
Exactly.
Well, I think we've delayed it long enough, Kenny. We got to talk about Iowa. Yeah. I have my thoughts. I know you've read my column over the weekend, which was, you know, I think pretty scathing, and I made it pretty clear what my thoughts about it were. But there's a lot of ways we could go with this. So I'm just going to leave it to you. Give me the general thoughts about the offense and kind of the state that Iowa football is in, because I can confidently say there is nowhere else in the country, probably at any level, that has the same dynamics as what's going on in Iowa football right now.
Yeah, I think this is probably pretty close to like a worst case scenario for what the expectations were for the offense and maybe what expectations were for certain newcomers and what's actually occurred. So you kind of looked at Iowa at the end of last year, and at least you and me were of the opinion that there was no choice but for Kirk and the staff to use the transfer portal. There was just no way that they couldn't, right? So
yeah,
they go and on the surface and on paper, pretty much upgraded every position. I mean, got a new quarterback, retooled the receiver room, added an all Big Ten level tight end. They got new pieces on the offensive line. The running back room didn't really need retooling because, you know, you had Caleb Johnson and you had LeSean and Jazz. And then, Gavin left, but then they added two running backs in the high school ranks. You felt good about that room. And there was just a lot of optimism about what the offense could be. I don't think anybody's expecting a top 25 offense, but
I gave them an A in the portal rankings. I mean, yeah, they did what they had to do, and then they added Nick Jackson, who now has over 400 career tackles.
Yeah, so you looked at it on the surface. You said, okay, I don't know what the offense is going to look like, but there's a skeleton here for a competent unit. And after 4 weeks, it's like, okay, Cade, there have been highs and lows. People would argue almost no highs, all lows, if you just look at his raw statistics, right? Now, Eric Hall's been solid, but there's, you know, the fumble really hurt them against Penn State. But he's been a starter. There really hasn't been anything from the receivers. Seth Anderson's had some good moments, but he's not really like a consistent contributor. Caleb Brown has barely played. And then probably the most disappointing part is that the offensive line additions have not played. And then the offensive line, like the guys that they're not playing over, have not really improved either. So, they're averaging less yards. You know, I don't know how many points they were averaging last year. They got to be close to the same amount of points per game. Maybe it's less. And at the end of the day, they are 3-1, but they beat three teams that pretty much everybody was expecting them to beat. And the offense didn't look, you know, overwhelming in either of those games. And then you come into Penn State and you put up 76 total yards. And, you know, at this point, it feels very much like it felt last year at the middle of the season, where it's just kind of like, okay, we're kind of grasping for straws here. Like, how can the offense get better? We're still talking about wide receiver usage. That was the thing last year. We're still talking about the offensive line. Some people are you know, still talking about play calling to some regard. It's like the same. It's the same old thing. And I think it's even more disappointing and probably more, you know, disheartening if you're a fan, because 2022 is different than this year, right? Because at the end of 2021, Kirk's whole thing was, I'm doubling down on the guys that we have in the building. So outside of just faith in the current personnel in the roster, there really wasn't much reason to believe that Iowa's offense was going to get a lot better, right? It was just like, okay, another year for Spencer Petras and this offensive line, this unit, maybe that'll be enough to push the offense forward, and it didn't. This time it was like, okay, we're going to bring in a whole bunch of new players, guys who have been proven at their level or their score, whatever. We're going to try to, you know, push the offense forward with the pieces that we have, and it still hasn't happened. Yep. That's kind of like where the disappointment is. So I don't really know what – that's like my general thoughts. I really don't know where else I can say as far as just like my general overview of the offense.
Yeah.
It just – this feels worse than last year, because it was like help was on the way, but it hasn't materialized in that way, at least in the first four games.
I still am of the – if you look at a lot of the advanced analytics, and Cover 3 talked about today, the Cover 3 podcast, I was actually better in 8 of the primary 10 statistics they use for run success rate, pass success rate, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But it still sucks.
Yeah.
It's still the worst in Power 5. Like, let's dive into some of these rankings real quick. So of 133 FBS teams, Iowa, total offense, 131st. They were 130th last year. 131st in first downs, 121st in passing yards, 126th in pass plays of 10-plus yards, 124th in fumbles. And then if you look into some of the more context, Iowa's the only Power 5 team averaging fewer than 300 yards a game, and they're only averaging 245.5. So it's a big drop off from second worst in Power 5 to Iowa. Last among Power 5 teams, first downs and pass plays, 10-plus yards, and Iowa's 127 passing yards per game, which is 30 worse than last season. So I think Scott Docterman wrote an article about this today or yesterday, and it was something that I've talked about on my podcast. I talked about on my board. Some people on my board disagree with me. Iowa's not going to be able to get wide receivers via the transfer portal next year. They're not going to be able to recruit. I don't know how they're going to recruit wide receivers. And again, Iowa fans, some Iowa fans disagreed with me, but I'm sticking by it. And now that you're outside the Iowa scope of things, I kind of want your take on it too. Yeah. Iowa could finish with 9 or 10 wins this season, right? I still think they can win the Big Ten West because I think the Big Ten West is the worst division in college football history. Maybe the ACC year where Virginia went, I think, 7-5 and ended up winning their division. That's probably the only one that can rival it. But it's, I just don't know how you're going to be able to convince people to go play for Iowa football and skill positions. And you think about Washington's coming over, Oregon's coming over, USC, UCLA, four good offenses. Michael Penix Jr. might be the best quarterback in the country. The Heisman favorite, in my opinion, with what he's done. So right now for Iowa, this is a narrative after they got blown out on national television. You know, I can't remember what the numbers were, but there was a very, you know, millions of people watched it. Iowa could win 9 or 10 games this year, but the narrative that is stuck with Iowa's offense, it's going to take multiple years to correct that for the casual sports fan and some of the national media that don't necessarily watch a lot of Iowa football. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I agree for sure. And I think it's to a point now where it's like, okay, even if Iowa were to jump from 130th to 80th, that would be a massive step forward. But in the eyes of casual watchers or people who aren't tapped into the nuances of Iowa, if you were to just look at raw stats and see a team that's ranked 80th out of 133, you would still say that team was not very good. Like, you'd just be like, oh, that offense sucks. Not knowing that they were been in the 130th, 120th, whatever, for 3 years now, and then they jump 50 spots. That's a massive upgrade. And it's just not going to register that way to people who haven't been following year over year. So it is going to take multiple years of good offense. And then past that, I mean, probably putting some players into the league that are, you know, contributing. That's, you know, Iowa's thing with tight end U, and there are other schools that try to lay claim to that title. But at the end of the day, Iowa's got four legit starting tight ends in the NFL. So that's something that can't be debunked. So it's going to take, you know, play on the field, but also, you know, kind of getting to that next level and making a mark in the NFL. And I honestly feel for Coach Copeland. And I know his name has been one that's been talked about in terms of, you know, if we want to replace coaches, you know, it's like the three names that are always brought up is like Brian Ferentz, George Barnett. And then I would say Copeland is probably third on that list. But I want to,
I mean, you can't fire Abdul. You can't fire Liddell Betts. I think they've done a tremendous job.
Yeah, I agree with that. And one thing I'll say about Copeland and kind of a way of defending him, he has shown an ability to get athletes to Iowa. He's not getting 10 four-star receivers every year,
yeah,
right? But Keegan Johnson and Arlen Bruce were four-star prospects. I don't know what Brody Brecht was.
He was a high three-star.
Yeah.
Him being a dual sport guy, he never stayed healthy enough for football season. Like, Brody is a guy that I think really could have contributed had he stayed healthy, yeah, Especially this year.
Yeah. But, you know, what I was trying to illustrate with Brody had Power 5 interest. Like, Keldon, yeah, Copeland has won recruiting battles against Power 5 schools for high three-star, four-star guys, right? Amir Smith-Marset is in the league. I'm not sure if Brandon Smith is still in the league on a practice squad, but he has brought
– I think he's still on a practice squad.
Yeah. And he went and convinced – you know, Seth Anderson had Power 5 interest. One of them was from Georgia Tech, where he is from, right? He won a recruiting battle against an in-state school in the city where Seth Anderson is from.
He convinced NFL bloodlines too.
He convinced Caleb Brown, who left Ohio State and had Power Five interest, to come to Iowa. So Kelvin Copeland has shown an ability to get people to believe in him as a coach. On a macro level, he's hamstrung by, the scheme and the route tree or whatever the case may be. But, and if you want to talk about development, that might be another, conversation. But just in terms of talent acquisition, I feel like he's done a good job of bringing guys to the room. And I think, last year when he had the quote about, I tell guys what it is in terms of if you're looking for stats and accolades and targets and touchdowns, whatever, this isn't the place for you, which is kind of like a brutal thing to hear, but you appreciate his honesty. And that is really truly what he's up against, right? He's not shying away from it. Other schools are using that against him, and he's not lying to these kids and saying that that's not the case. But he's still able to get people to commit to him to come in. So, I understand, when you're coming to evaluate these coaches, and these are coaches who make a lot of money to develop kids and put a product on the field, there comes a time where there's going to have to be a truthful, hard evaluation. But I do want to kind of give him that, grace and that caveat that he has, shown an ability to get some guys. But I do agree with you at this point. The transfer portal recruiting thing is going to be really hard to overcome, because here's another thing. And I know there were, fans that tweeted you some questions. Somebody asked about Seth Anderson, Caleb Brown leaving. They already used their one-time transfer. So unless they plan on sitting out for another year, they're here at Iowa. So that's another thing that then when you're talking about recruiting portal guys, this isn't a situation where somebody could say, I'm going to take a flyer, 1 year chance on Iowa. If it doesn't work out, I'm just going to go right back into the portal. Like once you
Kirk Ferentz retires, then I think they have 30 days from when that happens where they can enter the portal.
Right. So that's another thing to consider when you're like, okay, the transfer portal recruiting is probably not going to be on the same level as a kid knows 99%. Like if I commit to Iowa, that's where I'm going to be for the duration of my career. So it's going to be really, really tough on, the high school front and obviously the transfer portal front, to kind of get some difference makers on the perimeter.
So then diving into this, because this is something that I wrote about in my column. And again, I don't believe this is intentional, but right now, given the dynamics, whether it be personnel based or anything like that within Iowa Athletics, it's a culture of offensive ineptitude. And the biggest problem that I think a lot of fans have, Kenny, and even media members, like we've talked about it among media members, people would be surprised how much media members talk about the state of the program. I mean, you and I, whenever we, go out to eat or go watch games together, we talk a lot about Iowa or the beat that we're covering. There's no accountability right now with this poor performance. Now, look, fans can blame Brian. Fans can blame the O-line. Fans can blame position coaches. But nothing is changing, so there's no accountability other than a public outcry. And you've been a bottom 13, 14 offense for going on year three at this point. There has to be some sort of change. And I think this weekend against Michigan State is going to be one of the most important games in the last few years, because if they lose to Michigan State, given everything that's going on within the program, it could absolutely snowball. And I think the fans would just absolutely snap. The last straw would be broke. But think about it just from this perspective. Again, this is something I want to talk to you about. At what point is there actual accountability? Because you've watched Kirk Ferentz press conferences. It's gotten to the point where he almost can't justify what's happening. He simply says we have to get back to work to do better and look for ways to get involved. And the reality is that's not going to fly anymore, especially given the fact that this is Kirk Ferentz's last chance to win a Big Ten title. I really do believe that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, when you're talking about these Kirk Ferentz pressers, the questions aren't being asked. Right. Like if anybody who's listening to this podcast, the live, you can find Kirk Ferentz pressers on YouTube. If you just Google Kirk Ferentz on YouTube, type his name, you're going to find him. And I mean, you ask, how can wide receivers be motivated and be engaged when they're practicing every week and not getting but one target maybe in a game? Scott Docterman peppered Kirk early. And I remember when, the 25-point amendment press conference, Scott just asked him straight up, what does Brian Ferentz do well as an offensive coordinator and play caller?
Is that Kirk can answer?
if that's not a tough, straightforward question, then I don't know. I don't know what is. So the questions are being asked, the answers are not, you know, suitable. And,
yeah.
You know, that's just Kirk by, you know, personality and just kind of his philosophy. He's not going to throw anybody under the bus, and he's going to have a team mentality. And in some ways you do admire that, but in others, it does feel like there isn't a, it doesn't feel.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
It doesn't really feel like, I guess it's, I don't want it to come out this way that I'm not, that I'm saying Kirk Ferentz isn't like authentic and he isn't genuine, because he is, but it's like, it's how can you ignore, or how can you not just say, you know, offensively, this isn't working, you know, whatever the case may be, this is what we have to do to fix it. I think there was a question in terms of like, you know, offensive line, right? There was an offensive line question yesterday in the presser, and Kirk was like, he kind of took a holistic approach, like, oh, well, you know, we got to get better
in every way.
You have to get better in every way. So,
yeah.
You know, I understand he doesn't want to throw, you know, these kids under the bus. You know, they're working hard, they're practicing hard, they're doing everything they can. Doesn't want those coaches under the bus. But it does, lack of awareness. That's what I was trying to say. Not like not off.
Yeah, sure.
It's like it feels like there's a lack of awareness in terms of why the team is being held back so much. It is just because of the offense. So,
Well, go back to Chet Lysko's question from post-Penn State. This is one I've repeatedly used because I was trying to formulate a question, and Chad just asked Kirk flat out, what's the concern level with the offense? And Kirk gave a horrible answer. He just said, you know, we didn't score, but we didn't stop them from scoring either. He immediately brought the defense into it. Look, the defense wasn't perfect. They couldn't get off the field on third down. That's a legit criticism that still needs to be there, even though the defense was on the field for 97 plays. Like, they still could have been better, but why is the coaching staff or Kirk putting that much pressure on a defense and special teams to make plays and not on the offense? Like, there is no program in the country that has more pressure on its defense, on its special teams to make plays, to remain relevant. And then Kirk, I think, followed up by saying, there's no concern, if that really makes sense, other than the fact that we didn't score.
Which is like kind of how
I mean, that's like the game. That's football now.
That's how you win in any sport, is to score. So that, you know, that is a head scratching and a you know, a head shaking moment. But it is, you know, I think, you know, kind of what we're getting at is like Iowa wins and wants to play complimentary football, right? And I think it's gotten to the point where like the term and how we view complimentary football from an Iowa lens is so skewed to it's almost like we're going into these games like we just know the offense isn't going to do anything. It's going to have to be defensive special teams playing at an elite level, which complements the offense and brings it up. But if you look across the country, there are other teams that are playing complimentary football at a way higher and more efficient level. I reference Georgia a lot. And obviously, you know, Georgia's on a different level in terms of just like talent, program, whatever. But Georgia is a complementary football program, They're not a program that's – they're not a quarterback-reliant team. They're not a team that's, you know, if star players are out, it's going to drastically affect what they do offensively, defensively, whatever. They play complementary football. You could argue that they probably perfected it at this point. So other teams are playing complementary football, but it's, you know, everybody kind of pulling their own way. With Iowa, it's like, okay, 45, you know, maybe 45, maybe higher percent of defense, however many for special teams, offense 10%. Like if the defense can get a turnover on the plus side of the field and the offense converts that into points, like that's like the offense doing their part. Yeah. So that's kind of like where I'm kind of at with like the philosophy of the complementary football, which I think is a winning style, obviously, but it's just so skewed to the offense not giving a lot and the defense and especially is having to do so much to where we're kind of seeing something that we talked about last year, you know, and kind of just our one-off conversations where it's like, if Iowa's defense was 10% worse, what would it look like? If the defense was 20% worse, what would it look like? And the special teams what would it look like? And we're kind of that. I think that Penn State game was kind of a reflection of
they'd be Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
And yeah. I know, again, people, I think this is something else that I thought about too. And this does not discredit Iowa at all because they play who's on the schedule, but have the win totals against mediocre programs clouded the overall scope of where college football's heading when it comes to Iowa?
Yeah,
beating Illinois every year, beating Minnesota every year, beating Nebraska most years, and getting those wins. Has that just kept Iowa in a little bottle and in a little box without seeing where the greater scheme of it's going? And you mentioned it earlier, I think. There's such a widened gap now between Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, and not in that order, but that versus everyone else in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
It's never been more divided, in my opinion.
Yeah, that was something that and I remember this might have been after the Big Ten Championship 2021, my first round to beat me and myself and Chad and Andrew Downs. We had a conversation about this on a podcast about is winning an enemy of progress, which sounds on the surface, it sounds crazy if you say that out loud. Like, is the fact that I was winning at this rate stopping them from reaching another level? But the fact that the defense has been so good and special teams have been so good, it allows for Kirk to justify keeping things the way that they are, because at the end of the day, Iowa is still a very viable program. Like that stat about winning 8 games every year since 2015 is a great statistic. There's only a few teams that have been able to do it, but at the same time, it is a potentially dangerous statistic because it allows for the program to keep things the way that they are, because they can say we are winning to some degree at the same clip as the premier programs in the sport, right? Obviously, Iowa's not going to the playoffs or anything like that, but they are winning at a consistent level that pretty much no other team in the country is winning at. And that is a testament, again, to the staff that Kirk has built. And I think the way that he's able to pay his assistants and the loyalty and everything, he should get credit for that. And that's a huge reason why Iowa's successful, the continuity. But on the offensive side, it's allowed for them to just kind of settle for the offense being what it is, just because they know at the end of the day, you know, they're still going to be a viable team. And it would be he would have even more reason to stand on this leg if Cooper DeJean doesn't get hurt against Nebraska and Iowa beats them and goes to the Big Ten Championship. We will be sitting here having the same conversation about a back-to-back West Division champion, right? It's like, It's such a nuance and it's such a difficult conversation to wrap your mind around, because it's like we're talking about legacy and we're talking about Iowa's place in the Big Ten and nationally, and we're talking about, you know, culture issues and all of these things, but who's winning more than Iowa? And they've won the divisions, you know, back to back years, which is just crazy. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, we're seeing kind of like the bigger picture and like, what could Iowa be with the same defense, the same special teams, and an adequate offense? especially in a 12-team playoff era. If Iowa had a top 50, if Iowa had a top 75 offense and the same level of defense and special teams, they would be regularly competing for a playoff spot in the 12-team, in the 12-team era. That's how good they've been in the other two phases. And that's kind of where my thought is in terms of kind of where they are on the national landscape.
It's, like I said, it's such an interesting conversation. I want to make sure that we get to our questions that people submit as well. But like I said, you and I could continue to go down this path for forever. And, you know, the reality is this. Once the divisions go away, Iowa has to start playing USC. Have to start playing an Ohio State more. They have to play Washington. They have to play Oregon. Like, there's so much riding on this season and what's going to happen for the future based off decisions that Kirk's going to make. And we'll get to a point about Brian in a second. And again, if people think that firing Brian fixes everything, it's not. No. It's probably, I don't even want to say a step in the right direction. Maybe it opens the door a little bit for some more change. But this is not all Brian's fault. And I understand he's the scapegoat, and there are some things that are 100% accurate about what he should or should not be blamed for. But the idea that, you know, Iowa fires Brian, everything's going to be fixed is ludicrous because there are so many different aspects wrong with it. And the people that say, oh, you know, it's not all Brian's fault play calling. What about the O-line? What about this? What about that? Who's ultimately in charge of recruiting those guys and developing those guys?
Yeah. And I think the offensive line, that's like, I feel like if we're talking about systematic failures, I mean, you have three proven offensive line minds in the build. Kirk, you know, what Kirk did with, you know, him under Hayden Fry as an offensive line coach. Brian Ferentz, when he was an offensive line coach, that was like peak O-line U at Iowa when they were winning Joe Moore Awards and all that. And you have George Barnett. You have offensive line minds in the building. So that's kind of like, you know, one of the more overly systematic, failures is like, you know, you have all these guys, but the offensive line hasn't progressed. But on the point of the Big Ten, I just want to touch on this quickly.
Yeah.
I don't know where you stand on this. I don't know if we talked about this, but there are a lot of people on Twitter. And, I had a tweet. We're talking about people saying that they didn't want Iowa to go to the Big Ten championship because they didn't want them to lose by 50 on national television. There is never, in my opinion, and maybe when we get closer to it, you know, maybe a player or coach might speak on this at some point later on down the road, but there is never a moment in sports where if you have the opportunity to play for a championship that you would turn that down.
Absolutely. I think the idea is stupid. I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
There is never a moment where it's like, we have an opportunity to win a championship in our division. We have an opportunity to win a division title and play for a championship, to play for a Rose Bowl bid or to play for these. There is never opportunity. There's never a moment where it's like, you know what? It wouldn't be worth it because
I'd rather be irrelevant.
Right.
I mean, that's, come on now.
That's ridiculous.
Such a loser's mentality. It's a loser's mentality.
That's ridiculous. And then again, what you just talked about, if it doesn't happen this year, when is it going to happen? Because the last two times Iowa's played for a Big Ten championship, it has taken something historic for it to happen. The 2021 year was the record-breaking interceptions and the crazy turnover margin. And there was that point where every time the defense turned it over, Iowa turned it into points. Like that was a crazy year. Then the time before that was a 12-0 team in 2015. So it's going to take something either historic or once in a generation, once in a lifetime.
You're going to need a Heisman quarterback.
It's going to take something unbelievable for Iowa to get past one of USC, Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, Washington, if they keep this up, Oregon. I mean, and we're not even talking about if Luke Fickell turns things, you know, takes Wisconsin.
And I expect him to.
Right. Because he's an elite coach. If he takes them to a certain point, if Matt Rule, you know, if he turns Nebraska, if Michigan State hires Lance Leopold or something, like, you know, they hire a great coach and they take a step forward. Chip Kelly, you know, it's gonna be so hard to get to that top two spot that as a fan, you have to want Iowa to win this division and play for a Big Ten championship, just because the opportunities moving down the road, at least on the surface, are going to seem nearly impossible.
Nope, I'm with you 100%. And for last quick point I want to make before we get to the questions, the sign of a Hall of Fame coach is adapting and making adjustments. Nick Saban, all even related to Alabama. Yeah. What, 5 years ago, Nick Saban faced a crossroads. He changed the offense based on his personnel. Iowa cannot continue to live in this bubble where they commit to a broken scheme in modern football. It just is. It's a broken scheme in modern football. You can still take elements of it. You have to cater the offense toward your personnel. Iowa cannot just recruit dudes that they think will fit their scheme, because if they don't pan out, you're going to get the exact product that you're seeing on the field right now on offense. Yeah. It doesn't matter how good some of the players are. So Kirk has to adjust.
Yeah, no question. No question about it. You made a great point with Nick Saban. Kirby Smart changed his offense after 2019 when they got Todd Monken. And they completely changed how they played on offense. And it's happening in other places, not just Dabo Swinney at Clemson is facing a huge crossroads at this very moment with
no question
the transfer portal and NIL and those things. So it's happening everywhere. It's how are you going to respond to that? I think Kirk took strides in the right direction with embracing the transfer portal, right? Because if he didn't do that, you know, where would Iowa be if they didn't have the offensive pieces that they did bring into the point? We did take a step in the right direction, but now we're just kind of, you know, keep taking those, you know, steps forward to turning it around.
Yeah. Before we get out here, Kenny, I do want to make sure that we hit on our questions. And I'll let you answer some of them more so than me, because I don't like speculating on jobs, but luckily you're out of the scope of things. So yeah. I feel like I'll let you. Somebody asked if it's the likelihood of this being Brian's last year at Iowa. And I will answer this one, but I'll get you started first.
Yeah, I'm going to say very high. I can't say 100% because we just don't know. But it's really high, I think. When you think about offensive performance, when you think about pressure on the program, and then I think – and I was listening to John Miller's podcast. I think he made a very astute point where he was talking about Beth Goetz. If she ends up becoming the permanent athletic director and her first move is to retain Brian and to keep things status quo, that I don't know how that's going to play within the fan base. There's always going to be a large amount of the fan base that's going to ride with Kirk no matter what. And I think that it is, you know, that is deserved and that's warranted, because Kirk is the GOAT in terms of Iowa's football program.
He's going to get a statue outside Kinnick.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, her siding, to say that's the right or wrong decision, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's not fair to her. But
sure.
I do think that is not going to play very well with a large part of the fan base if that's like her first major move as athletic riches. You have to factor that in as well. So I would say very high likelihood that Brian is not going to be the OC next year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I was going to mention that podcast as well. I watched that and I thought that was a tremendous point, because I think she does deserve the job. I think you look at her resume, unless you're bringing in a top 5 or 10 sitting athletic director, Beth obviously deserves the opportunity. I think she's a fan favorite right now with the way she's trying to embrace NIL. And she's been working very close with Brad Heinrichs, this Swarm Collective CEO, which, again, I think is a massive deal. But you can lose that support real quick if you bring back Brian. Because I'll be quite honest with you, Kenny. Iowa's not hitting 25 points per game this year. They're not. I'll be shocked if they do. I still think they can win the Big Ten West. But unless something crazy happens, and, like, again, Iowa fans won't like this, and this might age very poorly, but I'll say it. Nebraska's not a gimme game, man.
No,
they're number one in the nation.
Yeah, and it hasn't been a gimme game. You know, it's not like
they're number one in the nation rushing defense. I want to make sure I got that part out there. Number one in the nation rushing defense, 45 points per game. And if they stop Iowa's rushing attack, Kenny.
Yeah, I mean,
what's Iowa gonna do?
Yeah,
that's what we've seen.
Yeah, not a gimme game by any means. If you look at the last several results, I mean, these are one possession games.
Yeah,
it was a miracle that Iowa won in 2021 where they went to the Big Ten West, you know, where they went to the Big Ten championship. And it was like the flu game and the crazy comeback and all of that. So it's not a gimme by any means. I would agree with you there.
So I'll go high likelihood that Brian is not retained. And there were a lot of rumors this past offseason that had a lot of legs to them. It just didn't end up panning out for whatever reason, which leads me to my next point. And this is one I will want to stay a little bit clear from. But again, you don't cover the program. So, I don't mean to put you on the spot, Kenny. Mm-hmm. But is this Kirk's last? Could this be Kirk's last season? Especially if Brian goes.
It could be. I don't think that's a little lower on the likelihood scale for me. It's a greater than 0% chance. I think, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, Kirk would retire or walk away before he has to fire, you know, Brian or anything like that. I do think that that is a well-taken point, but I do think when push comes to shove, he would stay Iowa's coach and Brian would exit. Because this is just me, you know, I'm not inside the program, but this is just, you know, for me, speculating what my viewpoint is. I don't know how much fun Kirk and Brian are having working together. Like, I'm sure that they enjoy working together, right? And like, you know, they obviously love each other. There's a strong relationship there. But this has not been a fun few years of, you know, them trying to figure this offense out. It's not working progressively. More pressure is building. It might be one of those things where Kirk, it's emotional for Kirk, but he says, you know what? It's better for my son to not be in this environment anymore. And it might end up benefiting our relationship if we're not in this foxhole together trying to figure this out. There's all this outside pressure on us, right? Maybe Brian goes and gets a offensive line, gets another job. Kirk stays at Iowa, and they're able to just, you know, talk about football in a way where it's not trying to figure out how to make the offense work and everything else that's surrounding the program and all the outside pressures. So I think there might be some benefits to their relationship on that regard. Again, this is just, you know, me speculating, just kind of giving my opinion on the matter. But I think, you know, Kirk, his last year, I'll probably put that at less than 50%.
I think he's thinking multiple year plan. I am very interested what the vibe's going to be like, assuming Brian does not return. Because right now, Kenny, like, there's no way you can go through another season like this and not make a change. We thought that last year, but you really can't do it. Because Iowa right now, and I'll put it completely blunt. And again, you're outside the program, you associate with a lot of national guys, et cetera. Iowa's offense is the laughing stock of college football.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, 100%. I mean, here's like a funny illustration of like when a casuals or like a national or prospective people who don't follow Iowa, right? So Sam LaPorta is killing it right now in the NFL. When he got drafted in the second round by the Lions, I'm in a group chat with people who, you know, only went to UGA, only live in the South. They don't watch Iowa. They're in the chat like, oh, this is a bust. Oh, the Lions, why they take an Iowa tight end in the second round? He didn't even score any touchdowns last year. This dude is garbage. Da, da, da. I'm like, I'm telling y'all, this dude can really play. They're like, oh, you're just saying that because you're in Iowa, whatever, whatever. I take Sam LaPorta in my fantasy drafts. Everybody's like, oh, that's what a stupid move that was. Da 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 da. And now he's killing it in the league. So like, it's even more than just perception of the program. It's a stigma that is following players into the league. Again, that might be jarring to hear as an Iowa fan, just because like we know, because we've watched Sam, we know Sam, how good of a player he is. But just on the outside, like, oh, you just see an Iowa, you know, offensive player going that high in the draft. It's like, why is this team picking this guy? He was a part of a horrible offense. So
he's going to go down as one of the more undervalued Hawkeyes of all time. Yeah. Like, he should have done a lot more with his college career, and that's not dissing him at all because it wasn't his fault.
Right, right. So that's just like a snapshot illustration of just kind of how these things can – you know, have multi-pronged effects.
Yeah. So somebody asked about how would you rank these factors in Cade's somewhat lackluster start? There's the quad injury scheme playbook, difference in talent around him here versus Michigan. I don't know if I can rank them, Kenny. Yeah. I think they're all contributing factors. I think the quad injury is certainly, you know, I'll put the quad injury last. I think it's the playbook. I think it's the scheme. And I think there was a lot of talent in Michigan, especially on the offensive line. And that's not dismissing what Cade can bring to the table. But I think the injury last season and him not playing last season is impacting him far more than like the quad injury. The quad injury certainly didn't help. Missing fall camp 2 weeks did not help. But again, like I've tweeted at people. I'm sure you've seen my tweets. So like if you're simply blaming Cade, I don't know what to tell you. It's not his fault.
Yeah.
And now he's a problem. He's a problem, but it's not simply Cade.
Yeah. Yeah. I think all of those things kind of work hand in hand, because when you're talking about like you said, the quad injury is secondary to the main injury that kept him sidelined until fall camp. Like it wasn't, I think that kind of coming in, at least from my point of view, I would hope that this was everybody else's point of view, that this was not going to be just an automatic seamless transition just because of the amount of reps that he lost at Michigan last year, not even being able to practice. Like, we're not even talking about game reps. He wasn't even able to get practice reps at Michigan last year. Then he's recovering through winter. He's a limited participant in the spring. And then he gets in the fall and he finally gets to put the pads on, then he gets hurt. But it was everything that kind of led up to that point that kind of held him back as well. So I would probably put that one, scheme, obviously another thing, the talent, can make the argument as well, but it's kind of hard to quote Kirk. Yeah. And this is sort of like a funny, thing from last year, fair evaluation and whole body of work. Like it's true. It's hard to kind of grade Cade. I mean, you probably wouldn't grade him well. I mean, the stats are not great, right? The offense hasn't looked great. I'm not trying to absolve him, but there are some factors into that. But I think, again, the offensive line is – I will put that as the number one problem with the offense, obviously.
You can't do anything in that scheme.
Yeah, yeah.
With the offensive line.
Yeah, that's the thing with the play calling. It's like, okay – Brian's not calling the right plays. And I know people talk about the sweeps on the short side of the field. Okay, point taken. But it's hard to do anything offense. It's hard to establish anything if you're not getting any type of respect at the point of attack. And that is, it's been a 3-year thing now. And kind of like how I gave Coach Copeland some grace earlier. I know George Barnett is a hot name and people want him out, but I just want to say, he hasn't had the best luck either. I mean, going back to 2021, Kyler Schott, who was an all Big Ten guy, breaks his foot, plays hurt that whole year. That was a huge part of the reason why the offensive line wasn't great. Justin Britt, another, and Cody Ince. These are guys who were supposed to play, right?
Yeah. And
it didn't pan out. It wasn't their fault. They were, hurt or whatever. David Davikoff, who was a legit blue chip prospect, who again,
that dude could have went first round. He had some of the best film I've watched an Iowa offensive lineman get.
Yeah. So I want to give Barnett some praise. Those are four guys who he was expecting to be players that he just did not have in his arsenal. So it's not like he hasn't had some adversity as well. But, with the guys who have been, Mason Richmond, Connor Colby, 3-year starters, Nick DeYoung's been in the program for, several years, even going back to Jack Plum last year. And then, Logan Jones, second year. There are guys who he's had that have not panned out either, right? So kind of like a double-edged sword with Barnett. But the offensive line, to me, is the number one problem with the offense.
And it goes back to what I said earlier. Somebody has to be held accountable at some point. Like, you just can't keep listing reasons for excuses. I mean, that's what, again, separates good programs from elite programs. There's an expectation saying no matter what happens, you got to perform at the highest level. And again, if you look at Iowa's pro style scheme, I mean, Cade came into a 3-step dropback without having two guys in his face. And I think that's a big problem. Again, Cade's missed some throws. Don't get it twisted.
100%. We are not absolving anyone. Everyone involved with Iowa's office shares some blame.
Everybody can get the smoke, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. If we're like, okay, this person gets this percentage of the blame, whatever, that's a whole nother conversation. But everybody is sharing this pie, right? Everybody's getting a piece. So yep. I want to be clear with that
point. Yeah. So somebody wanted me to grill you about how much money it would take for you to go up to Saban's podium, take a sip of his Coke, and put it down in the middle of the press conference and just sit back down.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Retirement money. Yeah, it would take that much money. Like, okay, I'm not working again after that.
Saban is so intimidating, even from like a media like a writer perspective, even though he's only what, like, I'm not even trying to like talk crap to him. He's only what, like 5'6"?
Yeah, he's not a tall guy, but he has an aura about him. And it's like, when you first walk up on him, it's like you can feel it. You can feel an energy between you and him. So he is an intimidating figure in that regard. I remember my first press conference. In my mind, I'm like, when I get the microphone, my hand is going to be like this. Like, I'm going to be trying to get a question out, and he's just going to be looking at me crazy because my hand is shaking. So luckily that didn't happen. And I've been able to ask all of my questions without stuttering or anything like that, because, again, when you have a figure like that and you're stuttering, it's like, okay, you know, am I making him mad by not spitting this question out or whatever? Yeah. But he's been cool. He hasn't really blown up at all this year, honestly. I mean, he's had a little bit surprising. He's had a few sarcastic remarks, but he hasn't had like a slam the podium, you know, famous Saban rant or anything like that. But
yeah,
do that to him, I would need money where, like, if I did that, I would walk away from The Athletic and journalism and be able to live for the rest of my life.
I was gonna say, you'll just go to like Cabo or something for a month at a time.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I feel you on that too, because I remember the first time I asked Kirk a question. I mean, because that was my first real, you know, journalism job post college, and I didn't ask, you know, Scott Frost, I didn't ask Mike Riley a lot of questions, but I'm like, you know, the first time I ask a question, am I gonna be, you know, nervous as heck? And once you kind of get into the mode and you just kind of understand your role and everything, I think it gets a lot easier. It has for me, at least. But Fran McCaffrey is probably a little bit more nerve-wracking than Kirk.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right, so a couple more quick ones. Kenny, have you been to – somebody asked if you've had Archibald's yet.
Very amazing.
What is this? Is that like a steakhouse down there?
Barbecue place. So down south, obviously big barbecue region. Dreamland is like the – main barbecue brand or whatever in Alabama. I think Chad, when he came down for when y'all came down for the tournament,
yeah,
Chad went to Dreamland in Birmingham, and he said it was really good. So that's like a main brand, but Archibald's is like another notable barbecue brand. Very, very good.
And somebody asked, how many Harry's buckets have you consumed yet? I don't know if that's a college bar or like what that is.
I have no idea what that is. So maybe I'm not immersed in true Tuscaloosa culture yet. I don't know what a Harry's bucket is.
Unless it's one of those, yeah.
We have a Saban presser tonight. So I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to ask the vets on the beat. Okay, what's a Harry's bucket? Is that what
Harry's bucket? Yeah. And then there was one more quick one I wanted to ask you about. That a couple of people were promoting your coverage and how well you did at Iowa, and they appreciated that. So what's the feeling on Saban on the beat? Is he gonna try to get Alabama back up to the top before he retires, or do you think like this is kind of, I don't want to say it for him, but you know, there's speculation every year at this point. It's same thing with Kirk, right?
Yeah, well, 100%. I think, you know, it's interesting because every time Saban's been asked about his age or, you know, where he's standing in the program, he's like, you know, I feel great. You know, I feel great health-wise. I feel like I'm in my 30s and all this other stuff. And he's still, I mean, very active. I remember we got a chance to have an open practice for fall camp, and Nick Saban is doing the ab workouts with his team. He's still working on it. So, like, he's very much still in it. And I think, you know, Alabama's not what they've been, but that just means that we're not just writing them in as a 12-0 team, right? Like, yeah, they're still very much viable SEC national championship contenders. And if they round out and find an identity this year, that could still very much be the case. So, you know, the talent is there, the infrastructure is there. So I don't think that you know, there's going to be a Nick Saban retirement at the end of this year, but obviously, you know, he's on the back nine of his career. So, you know, personally, I think if I were to, you know, if I stay in this role for, say, 5 years, I think I would have, I think I, at the end of 5 years, I would have covered a Saban retirement, but I don't think it's going to be like this year, if that
makes sense. So I did the favor, you know, my journalistic duty. I've investigated what Harry's bucket is.
Okay.
Would you like to hear what it is? So this is from TuscaloosaNews.com. It's a drink with a flavor and a finish as unique as the bar that serves it. Harry's Crazy Bucket, served exclusively at Harry's Bar on Hargrove Road. I don't know if that's College Row. I don't know if you know where that's at down there. Has earned its place in lore of the University of Alabama college life. It begins with the foundation of liquor, including two kinds of bourbon, vodka, gin, rum, and scotch. And it's topped with two beers, Sprite, Coke, Grenadine, orange, and cranberry juice.
That is insane.
That's
what color is that drink?
I'm about to look up a photo. That's like a Long Island on steroids.
That's crazy. And you know me, Long Island, I like those. So that's you said scotch. I was like,
oh my God. Oh, two kinds of bourbon and scotch. Oh, dude, I wish I could put this up on screen right now.
Yeah.
They literally serve it in like a tin bucket, and it looks like they spray painted Harry's bucket on it.
Yeah.
And it's like a light red. It almost looks like a lighter grenadine.
That's crazy.
That sounds insane. Kenny, I don't even know if I would like that.
Yeah, I was about to say that sounds like closer up your alley than mine. Sorry, well, I about to say I don't know what you're looking at on the, if you can see me, but like my I'm on my New York Times, The Athletic. They were gracious enough to give me a MacBook, but it requires regular updates. So like I've just been like deferring my updates, but now they have like this screen that I can't exit out of. That's like you're gonna update this right now. So I don't know if you can I can obviously hear you and you can hear me, but I don't know if you can see me. So
I got you still for now. So
yeah, if my picture was me, that's why.
What an ending. Kenny, right. This was a lot of fun. We went longer than I thought we were gonna go, but I'm happy we finally made it work. And honestly, if things go down this path, I might have to get you back because this was a ton of fun. I know people appreciate you understanding Iowa culture, but now being far enough removed to actually give a national perspective as well. So
yeah,
I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me on. Like I said, when I left, and I still feel like this now, there is a lot of love in Iowa that I felt from the people out there, from the fans to the media to, you know, even the coaches and administration, and the love is reciprocated on my end as well. So I'm going to continue watching. I'm going to continue supporting. My parents are still watching Iowa. So we are Iowa fans. So we
are. God bless Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Phenomenal people.
Yeah, appreciate it. You know, they ask about you regularly and all that as well. And Chad too. So, but we're Iowa fans. So we're here in this with y'all. so, you know, hopefully Iowa turns things around, and I understand it, as well that, you know, the fans aren't having fun. The players and the coaches aren't having much fun about now. You know, it's not fun for the media either to continue to kind of cover this thing and try to find fresh angles and new perspectives and to make it engaging for the fans. So, you know, I hope Iowa turns it around and, have a more exciting things to write about. And, hey, you never know. If Iowa turns it around, let's say Iowa turns around and maybe Alabama doesn't have, you know, as great of a season, maybe Iowa and Bama end up in like the Citrus Bowl against each other or something like that.
See, I would love that. Alabama fans would hate it.
Yeah.
But hey, everybody, be sure to follow Kenny on Twitter at Skinny Kenny, Alabama beat writer for The Athletic, formerly of Des Moines Register, my good friend and colleague. So Kenny, we'll do this again, but I appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.